Tuesday morning here on JR Morning. Good to have you. Lloyd, it's nice to see you, my friend.
It's nice to be seen.
Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
You have a nice little vacay?
I did have a nice little vacay. Got a lot of rest. And that's the thing. You know, when you get rest and your sleep pattern changes.
Oh, yeah.
And so you go to bed a little later. You get up a little later.
Oh, yeah.
But then when it's time to go back to work, you got to get up. That alarm goes off at 4 o'clock and you're like, ah, what's going on here? So, yeah. But I'm good, though. I'm
good. Yeah. It's nice to see you.
Yeah. We had a good time, man. I had family from out of town. I had a cousin who lives in California who hasn't been to Detroit in 30 years. And
from Detroit?
From Detroit, and she lives in California, been living in California for
She want to come
forever.
Back now?
I don't know.
She want to get out of California?
But
that
she,
cesspool?
She likes
place
it here.
Is a mess.
She had a great time
good,
here, man.
Good
we
for
all
her.
Got together, man. We had a really great time here, man. So, and also, I mean, I went to a couple of concerts.
Uh-huh.
Chicago was here at the Fox. Also, Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind & Fire at LCA.
You're grooving.
So, I mean, I had a
grooving
good
over
time.
Vacation.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Good
for you. Well, it's good to have you back. Lots to talk about. I don't – look, U.S. soccer was never going to win this World Cup. Okay.
You knew that from day
yeah.
one?
Yeah. They're just not – that's not who we are.
Uh-huh.
If you want to line up and play football, we'll beat the brakes off anybody in the world.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean
– oh, gas. No,
thank you.
Sweet.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
Chase is asleep at the wheel this morning. But we're just not – that's not who we are. We're not a soccer powerhouse. But it does hurt. It does stink when you lose.
Yeah.
Especially when you get pummeled.
Yeah, it was like 4-1. Yeah.
And, you know, Malik Tillman had a marvelous free kick goal that tied it up at 1. Belgium scored very early in that game.
Okay.
To take a 1-0 lead, then we tied it up, and then it was after that. It was, I mean, a minute and a half later, Belgium scored again to take the lead, and the United States just looked lethargic. They looked uncertain. They didn't look authoritative like they have throughout much of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the netminder Fries had a absolute horrific blunder. He came way out to play a ball, foot got caught, ball got deflected. And, you know, essentially Belgium had a wide open net. They put
yes,
it in.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they scored late in extra time. And 4-1 was the final. So now this is the last co-host city to be host country, rather,
mm-hmm.
to be exited as from this tournament. Canada and Mexico were previously eliminated.
Who's gonna come out at the top when this is all said and done, in your mind?
Well, I mean, I think Argentina is still the team to beat.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Spain looked good beating Portugal.
Okay.
You know, Norway has looked really good. France has looked really good. This is the thing, is once you get to this point in the tournament, it's all of these teams are really good.
Yeah, of course.
Like, you don't just fall into one.
Yeah.
Right? You have to play, you know, 100 minutes of really good soccer.
Yeah.
And yesterday they played, you know, 20 minutes of really good soccer. It was rough to watch. But early exit. So now we get to just sit back, kick our feet up, and enjoy. Well, I don't know.
Well, okay.
Okay. Well, right. It's like, well, you do that.
My 5 minutes on Saturday that I usually
We get to sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of this tournament. But, yeah, it was a tough ending for the U.S.
Frustration growing among DTE Energy customers after severe storms knocked out power for thousands across Metro Detroit over the holiday weekend. Some customers say they lost groceries they had purchased for the holiday and question whether DTE's $42 outage credit is enough to cover their losses. DTE officials say they understand the frustration, but argue that the credit is among the largest offered by utilities nationwide. The company says estimated restoration times are based on damage assessments from crews and engineers, not guesses. Repairs are prioritized by safety concerns, critical facilities like hospitals, and then the largest outages first. DTE says power is expected to be restored to all customers by the end of today. Smith's Power, the customers, a lot of their power came back on Sunday. I know my daughter, my stepdaughter, was with us over the holiday weekend because she lives in Detroit on the west side, and she lost power. Tree fell down in her backyard and fell on some lines, and so she lost power. So her and her kids, my Grandkids came and stayed with us until Sunday, and their power was back Sunday morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still 30,000 people, just under 30,000 people without power right now. And this is drawing reactions from lawmakers as well. We'll talk to Albus Farhat, the state representative out of Dearborn, coming up at 6:19. He wants hearings on DTE Energy and some of the restoration efforts and certainly some of the issues that's being brought up by folks. Also, six people are dead in Michigan following these storms that knocked out power to almost 500,000 people. Three of the deaths of the storm in all children came in two different Wayne County incidents involving power generators running after the storm. Three others died in a car crash on 94 in Dearborn. Police say that a vehicle was stopped there due to flooding on the roadway and they got hit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One of them was a teen whose parents were overseas and he had a generator in the basement.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that you have to keep outside, obviously.
You have to keep them outside. And you should have a working carbon monoxide detector in the home as well.
Yeah, but you're a teen. You know, family's gone. You're not
thinking like that. Absolutely not.
So some pretty sad stories there, too.
The U.S. Department of Justice says it plans to send election monitors to three Michigan cities during the August 4th primary election. And letters from the DOJ's voting section indicate monitors will be present here in Detroit, also in Lansing and in East Lansing to observe election administration. Move comes as the Trump administration increases scrutiny of Michigan's voting systems, including previous requests for voter registration records from Wayne County. Justice Department officials say the three cities have had federal election monitors in the past, but some local officials are pushing back, disputing DOJ claims about voting issues in Lansing and calling the monitoring unnecessary. Michigan officials have previously found no evidence of any widespread fraud in the 2020 election, despite repeated claims by the president and his supporters. The DOJ says it will work with local clerks ahead of the primary to coordinate the monitoring effort.
Meanwhile, the Michigan State University gets a big boost. Kevin Guskowitz is staying at MSU.
I saw that.
He had accepted a job basically at Clemson University.
Mm-hmm.
That triggered Jay Batt's buyout going lower and he leaving for Kentucky. But Kevin Guskowitz is staying at MSU despite this flirtation with Clemson. University officials announced that Guskowitz, who had been considering this, has decided to stay in East Lansing. It provides stability, certainly for MSU leadership.
Absolutely.
At a time when they needed desperately. And I think Kevin Guskowitz is a wonderful president.
I agree, 100%.
Although the president at Kentucky tweeted out yesterday,
Jay Batt's is staying,
that
right?
Jay Batt is still going to Kentucky.
Okay.
But because Guskowitz is staying at MSU, this is how all the contract legalese, all this stuff works
okay.
out.
Okay.
Kevin Guskowitz leaves. Well, that triggers basically the 50% less buyout for Jay Batt.
Sure.
You tie these guys together at these positions.
Uh-huh. Tie bar.
Well, now that Guskowitz is staying, that 50% discount goes bye-bye. And now you're back at full price.
Oh.
So now the buyout for Jay Batt is $5 million. So Michigan State University will get a couple extra million bucks in the buyout if, in fact, Jay Batt does leave for Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the president of Kentucky, that is still the case. Jay Batt is leaving.
Okay.
So just something to be mindful of. Also, DOGE has officially closed the doors. The Department of Government Efficiency, the Trump administration member, had launched this initiative with Elon Musk. They had aimed to save $2 trillion. Remember that?
Yeah.
I loved this idea, by the way. Absolutely loved it. We have so much waste in our federal government. They don't know how to spend money. Do you know how much money that they claim to have saved?
How much is that?
$215 billion. That's how much DOGE claims to have saved the U.S. government.
Okay.
$215 billion, which is far from $2 trillion.
Sure.
Dollars. Although you have these independent estimates that are saying that it could be as high as $85 billion. Could be as low as a billion, but could be as high as 85. So they woefully it just didn't work.
Do we know exactly how many? I mean, do we really know?
We don't. I mean, maybe they saved a little bit of money.
Wasn't it a dashboard that was supposed to be put up and we were supposed to be able to see how much they were
saving?
Well, again,
DOGE claims $215 billion in savings.
Okay.
Which is not the mark of $2 trillion.
That's kind of
again,
far off.
The math thing is tough.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up, obviously the frustration boiling over with DTE Energy. We're going to talk to a state lawmaker who says there need to be more hearings on what type of service the utility is providing. It's next on JR Morning.
Michigan summers mean outdoor adventure and fun, but these high temperatures shouldn't break your budget. Count on Consumers Energy to help you make the most of this season and your budget with tips and ways to save. Making small changes like shifting some energy use in the morning to evening and raising your thermostat a couple of degrees and doing laundry at night or on the weekends, that could all help you lower your bill while keeping your home comfortable. Discover more ways to beat the heat at consumersenergy.com/summer.
You all right, my friend?
I'm okay.
You all right? I love you. I'm glad you're back.
Man, I'm glad to be back, boy. I'm telling you, don't miss a beat around here.
No, no. Meanwhile, more than 3,600 people, or excuse me, 36,000 people still without power statewide. That's a combination of DTE Energy and Consumers Energy. Yesterday, it was 83,000. So
yeah,
we are making progress in the right direction. But the frustrations for people, I think, are valid. Right? Like, if we have a storm Friday,
mm-hmm.
and it's Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
I'm still without power,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty upset.
Yeah.
If I got a fridge full of groceries.
Oh, I am. And this is the holiday weekend.
Correct.
People bought a lot of groceries.
I'm upset. I understand the frustrations of people.
So do I.
And so do some lawmakers. Because there are talks going on that there needs to be more conversations with DTE officials in particular, in this case, because that they feel that there is a failure to respond in a timely manner, that there requires more state intervention, is the word being thrown around by Representative Albus Farhat out of mm-hmm. Dearborn, and, mm-hmm. and we're working to get in contact with him. But he's already put out a hearing request
yeah.
for DTE. He says they haven't responded, at least according to a story in the Detroit News. So this is not new. This isn't new.
No.
When there are mass power outages, mass storms, seems like we're losing power. Now, we haven't actually had this, it feels like, in a while.
It's been a while. And, you know, DTE has said they've worked to try mm-hmm. to get the power back quicker by doing some different rerouting of lines and how they do it to get the power back on quicker. But here we are Tuesday, and still a lot of people still have no power, and they're supposed to have the power all back, you know, by sometime tonight. So, mm-hmm.
And then you get the comparisons. Well, why is it that a hurricane can roll through Florida and most of their people are without power? Right? It's different.
Yeah.
They have started. It's like, why, in my opinion, why wouldn't mass transit work here? Well, because we have no infrastructure for it.
We
have to start from the ground, you know,
definitely.
From ground zero.
We are a Motown. We are a car place.
Right, right.
We are car capital.
Correct. That's what we do. We drive.
We drive.
We like to drive. We
yes.
like the Hemis and the... That's
yeah.
what we like.
Yes.
We don't have what New York has or
no.
Chicago has.
Mm-mm.
It's not what we do.
Mm-mm.
So it's different. The grids are constructed differently from the beginning.
Yes.
Because that's how the weather is down there. We have different weather conditions here.
And I also think, you know, and I heard this while I was off during the storm, that DTE had not anticipated that the storm was going to be as
mm-hmm.
bad as it was, and they didn't really have all the people here ready to go like they usually have, but they got them here now, and so now things are moving and everything. But had they anticipated that this storm was going to be as bad as it was, then maybe they would have had more people standing by, people from other states, you know,
sure.
the different electric companies coming in to you know, to be ready. But they were not kind of caught behind the eight ball.
So according to the story in the Detroit News, one of the reasons for the delay in restoring power is that most of the damage was caused by 50 to 70 foot tall trees outside DTE easements that fell during the storm. And those trees wouldn't be touched by the utility's tree trimming service unless they were deceased. So those trees had to be dead before they were able to deal with them.
Okay.
But that's just because it's on the easement. We see it all the time. These companies that'll go out and trim trees,
oh, yeah.
prune trees around.
Trim mine.
Around, yeah. yeah, around mm-hmm. those around those power lines.
Sure, yeah.
And then one of the other things that people talk about is burying the lines. Like, for example, my house was built, you know, whatever, 14, 15 years ago.
Okay.
Our lines are buried.
Are underground.
They're underground because it was a newer
newer
home.
Subdivision, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is not the case for everybody.
No, because if Because I think we've talked to DTE before, yes, and they talked about how expensive that would be.
It would be incredibly expensive, which means who's footing that bill?
Exactly.
It would be us, well, to course, some extent. They, sure, would be raising rates, things like that.
Sure.
And then the time, the disruption to the infrastructure, to the roadway, to your driveway. I mean, it would be,
oh man,
it would be an unbelievable undertaking that, again, if you don't have that already, to go back and start, go back to these homes that are 50 years old, yep, and try to bury the lines,
oh,
it would be tough.
It would be, yeah.
It would be tough. And so it that's the rock and the hard place I think people feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, what are we doing about this then? If we're not going to be proactive in trying to get people in a more, in a better position so they don't lose power in the first place, but restoration efforts are taking a long time, where's the middle ground?
Yeah.
That's the frustration.
Yeah, it is. It is. And as you said, I mean, this $42 a day, you know, after extended outages, and DTE says this is, that's the, they probably pay the most, more than any other utility company, as far as, you know, those extended outages and you losing, you know, food and getting that credit. So,
mm-hmm,
but I have friends who have posted on Facebook, said, I just bought a bunch of food for the holiday. I'm going to have a cookout. I got, you know, and now it's all gone.
Look, and the reality is when you're going through it, it's awful.
It's horrible.
And your days and days. And by
and
the way, it was hot. It was, yeah, right. Thankfully, we're not last week.
No.
Thankfully.
No,
it's getting hot in here.
Yes.
Thankfully, it's not 100 degrees.
Yes.
But 80 still stinks when you don't have air conditioning.
It does. It does.
You
and,
know.
And, you know, in 80.
We're about to go back into the 90s here. Coming up in a few,
yes,
days.
That's right. I mean, but even 75, 80 degrees for a few days and you don't have air, your house is going to be hot.
Well, like our air conditioner, we needed service on it because it stopped working.
Uh-huh.
So we went and stayed with my mom. Not everybody has that ability.
Exactly.
Right? Not everybody. It was. I couldn't hear those kids talk about how hot it was. I was like, yeah, it's hot. I'm sweating. We got to go.
Speaking of that, though, I also know some people who got hotels because, mm-hmm, their power was out. Mm-hmm. But it being the holiday and the fact, oh, yeah, that they know that the power is out, they got them. I mean,
yeah, and that's
terrible. They were spending $500.
A night?
A night. $450.
For what, the Ritz?
No. It was $200 for hotels where you go, come in off the street. You know, the door.
Oh, a motel.
Yeah. It was $200 for those. Hotels with the lobby and all the $425.
Wow. Interesting. Wayne County, or Wayne State's new public health school gets a new need, fills a need that they had. We'll talk about that coming up on the other side. It's JR Morning. So we've seen universities around the country worry about the type of federal funding that they're getting, mm-hmm, for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those has popped up over the last year and a half or so. But Wayne State is moving forward with these plans for a standalone school of public health, which they say is a way to strengthen public health education and research.
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of that is, well, if you're getting less money, where is that money coming from? Doing the public good, doing the university good by creating this public health school. But again, if you're getting less federal funding than you normally have, how do you make up that difference? Let's talk about it. Dr. Bernard Costello is with Wayne State University. He's the Senior Vice President of Health Affairs and joins us this morning. Doc, good morning. It's good to have you.
Good morning. Very good to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
We'll talk about the funding part of this in a minute. Talk about why we need a school of public health at Wayne State.
Well, Detroit has major public health needs. We're the worst or second worst in a number of different areas for public health outcomes like diabetes, cardiac outcome after heart attacks. And we have extraordinary community, civic, academic, and health system assets. That combination makes it an ideal place for modern practice-oriented schools of public health.
And, you know, when you talk about improving health, doctor, is it really about medicine anymore, or has it kind of become just as much about, you know, the housing and transportation and clean air and education and economic opportunity?
Oh, you're identifying some of the key aspects of this. We need to work upstream further with prevention to do more with the limited dollars that we have. We spend so much money on the back end taking care of folks that have critical health problems in the intensive care unit, for example, way more expensive than taking care of the clean air, the preventive medicine methods that we would have to improve health on the front end, making it easier to treat those problems at population scale, not at the individual scale, much less expensive.
Mm. Talk about how you find those partnerships within the city. Obviously, Wayne State is ingrained in this community, but when you look at the partnerships, whether that's private, public, things like that, in order to fund this new school, how does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the main things that's important to recognize here is we're not starting from scratch. This is organizing an existing public health ecosystem within Wayne State University, things we're already doing, but improving the scale, the visibility, the community orientation that Detroit, Southeast Michigan, and indeed the nation need. So we have many of the pieces that are necessary. And it's also leveraging our partnerships with Henry Ford Health System, with McLaren, with the county, with the city, with others that are doing the same types of things. It's a force multiplier for good.
Doctor, you know, public health has increasingly become politicized. How do you keep, you know, science and medicine and public trust from becoming, you know, these political footballs?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I appreciate the fact that we have to think about our resources very carefully. But this is about economic development, which is something everybody can get behind. We were at the Mackinac Policy Conference, like many folks. And when you talk to folks like Bob Riney or anybody who is interested in economic development, they want to focus on the health of this community. It brings people in to work here when they know that we have good health care to provide. It's an improvement in our general life and lifestyle for our community to be healthy. It's mom and apple pie. There's nothing that you can't get behind here when you talk about the health of our people and our communities.
So where are you at in this process?
So great question. So the Board of Governors, our governing body, voted to charge the president, myself, other key leaders in the university to formally start the school, which is not like you think when you think of elementary school with your backpack running through the doors. It's not a single day when we start this. It's bringing those pieces together. It's organizing things for key milestones with the groups that look at the quality of our programs from the Department of Education. It's bringing the faculty that's existing together in one big unit. And it's also adding some faculty that will need to fill some gaps and enhance our platform. So it's beginning the work to really start that that amalgamation of those key assets.
And you said that this school will be more actionable than traditional public health schools. What does that look like in the real world? How will a Detroit family actually feel the difference?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to attend some wonderful schools throughout my training, some really top five, top 10 institutions in research. Those institutions are built to do high-level, numbers-oriented, quantitative research and think about it in terms of theory and policy of what is possible. A place like Wayne State is actionable, meaning that it's designed to be community engaged. The students are embedded in the community with our partnerships that we've had, frankly, since 1868 when this place started as a medical school. It was built for the people of Detroit. And to do it in partnership with them that entire time. Most of those top 10, top 20 universities don't have relationships like we have with the community built on decades of trust. That makes this a real lever for good and a real opportunity for our students and faculty to make a difference. Not just talk about it, not just write about it in papers and talk about it at meetings.
Dr. Bernard Costello, thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it. This would be a wonderful crown jewel for Wayne State, and we look forward to seeing it develop. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You got it. Do you know who Brian Johnson is? That name ring a bell?
Brian Johnson?
Brian Johnson. Brian Johnson is a former tech guy, sold his, I want to say PayPal, something like that. He was early in on a major app and sold it and made a bunch of money, right?
Okay.
Well, there was a documentary on him on Netflix from a few years ago. It's called Don't Die, The Man Who Wants to Live Forever. He has gone through extremes. To live forever.
Okay. I didn't know his name, but I've heard about this.
So you know this guy.
I know this guy. Okay.
Okay. He's this longevity guru. He's talking about how many vitamins and minerals he takes a day.
Yes.
And he's very diligent in the cryo chamber and the masking and the blah, 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 blah. It's actually bizarre behavior.
Okay.
But whatever. He thinks that he will live forever.
Okay.
Sorry, this is not funny.
Don't tell me he's dead.
He has an autoimmune condition. he says, which is causing his stomach to eat itself.
Oh.
I only laugh. I only laugh. Because if you have seen this guy, if you have seen the documentary, you probably have had the same reaction I have, which is like, bro, eat a sandwich. Enjoy your life a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you, why do you want to live forever? What's the point of all of this? Don't you want to have some sort of joy? He's like, I don't have any joy. This is fun. I'm the Petri dish. I'm the science experiment to see how long we can do this for.
And to me,
you had a Reese's? It's awesome.
Not having any joy contributes to me to you getting sick or being sickly when you're not having joy.
Right. Right. But he says that they're going to try to figure it out. He wrote on Instagram, somewhere between 2 to 5 people on the planet have this disease that he has. I'm going to try to solve it. He says, whatever, all those things. It's like, well, some of this stuff. Yeah, you can certainly extend your life by eating healthier.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an MD to know that.
No.
But also there are genetics at play here.
Well,
and if you are predispositioned to something that you could get that has nothing to do with your eating
habits.
Heart
disease.
Correct.
From in the family.
But his point is I can stave off heart disease by doing X, Y, and Z to make sure that I don't contribute to that.
Okay. Even though it might be in your DNA or in your genes.
Yeah, it's called autoimmune gastritis. It's a chronic autoimmune disease, which the immune system attacks the stomach's acid-producing cells, reducing stomach acid and impairing vitamin B12 absorption, things like that. So he's got something that it probably won't allow him to live forever or until he's 160 years old.
Wow.
Coming up on the other side, tensions in the UAW. We'll talk about it. It's JR Morning. Well, there have been some reported tensions between UAW President Sean Fain and the federal watchdog overseeing the union. And this has been going on for quite some time. And this comes as these overseas wars are getting, apparently, to Sean Fain, because they were arguing over something that has nothing to even do with the union.
Right.
But I think what it does show is that there is bad blood. There is obviously the UAW doesn't want to be in the position they are with federal oversight into what they're doing. But it's because of their past actions that have required
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, they've had issues in the past, and that's why we're at this point.
Let's talk about it. Merrick Masters, the Professor Emeritus of Management at the Mike Ilitch School of Business at Wayne State, joins us this morning. Merrick, it's good to have you back. What do you make of this? Because Neil Borofsky, the appointed monitor in this case, had put out a report last month about some of the behind-the-scenes, I guess, butting of heads, if you will, between the leadership and the oversight.
The statement issued by Sean Fain shortly after the monitor's report was released demonstrates that he has issued a declaration of war, stating in effect that he will respond aggressively to any disciplinary or other remedial actions to which he might object the monitor proposals in connection with following up on this investigation involving the dispute with the international vice president Boyer.
I know Sean Fain says that these investigations are politically motivated. Is there any evidence supporting that claim? Or is this just a defense strategy we often see from leaders who are under the microscope?
There is an incident coincidental in timing to the investigation that was launched on International Vice President Boyer's charges against Fain for retaliation. Whether it's coincidental or it actually is a motivation for Fain's response to the monitor is immaterial, I think, in the sense that what the UAW has stated through Fain and his legal counsels is that they will not tolerate continued interference in the UAW's affairs. And they view that the monitor has, in his behavior in the past, interfered with the UAW's internal affairs, and that the investigations are a continuation of that interference. And the monitor, therefore, has exceeded his boundaries.
What do you think the rank and file's perception of this is? And we've got there are major contract negotiations on the horizon, elections approaching as well. How do they view this? Do they like calmer waters, or do they like kind of the pit bull approach of Sean Fain?
Well, I think there will be a division of opinion. Some will view the monitor's actions as disturbing and reflecting a bias against the Palestinians in Gaza. I think others will view the monitor's actions as a bit heavy-handed, while others may view Sean as being defensive and having engaged in a variety of activities, which he's just using this as an excuse for. I think the more important question is what the monitor is going to do in response to this in terms of determining whether there's any remedial actions he'll take that may jeopardize Fain's chances of getting elected or reelected as president. If none of those actions are forthcoming, I don't think you'll see much more of a life to this story. But if the monitor does take such action, Fain is going to respond very aggressively with his legal team and challenge that.
And, you know, while all this is happening, Professor, at the leadership level, you got the auto workers who are focused on, you know, their wages and the contracts and job security. How much of a distraction is that for the union?
Well, I think anything like this is a distraction. And if the monitor were to do something that would jeopardize Sean Fain's eligibility, run for election, or make charges against him that could jeopardize the statue before the membership, I think this issue will become front and center in the campaign. But barring that happens, I think it's an issue that sort of lies in the background. Most people would probably hope that it would go away. And it's due to tensions, normal tensions that exist between a monitor and a union over governance issues that are unavoidable in any situation like this.
I'm also wondering, does, you know, this internal conflict like this, does that diminish the union's bargaining power with the big three?
I think anything that detracts from its focus, anything that detracts from the leader's credibility with the rank and file, anything that aggravates the monitor to perhaps continue the monitorship and upgrade investigations into Sean Fain will be difficult to deal with going ahead.
Does he still have some of the cachet that he does now that he did when they were renegotiating?
Well, I think he has some of the cachet. He's trying to rejuvenate what cachet he had immediately after the 2023 record contracts. But the situation that he's in is difficult, not only because of this particular episode or tension with the monitor. The situation that he's in is difficult because of the plight of the auto industry. You've seen recent layoffs, recent declines in sales, and other things that indicate that companies face a very choppy future. And I think that the destabilization within the industry as a whole is the biggest threat to the UAW going forward.
Does this dispute end after the election, or are we going to be working at months or even years of continued legal and political battle?
I think this dispute continues as long as the monitor continues the investigation of Sean Fain.
Merrick Masters, appreciate your time as always. Thank you. We'll talk soon. Yeah, you got it. Donald Trump, meanwhile, heading to Turkey for this NATO summit. He is expected to meet with Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. There have been a number of Russian missile attacks on Kyiv. There have been casualties in that conflict as well. Plus, Donald Trump wants NATO to get to this 5% of their GDP spending for defense much faster than 2035.
Yes.
That was already set out. They had already agreed to do it, all of those things. But his main contention is that Europe's got to take a bigger responsibility in their defense here. Meanwhile, Ukraine's going to come to the table and go, help, I need more.
Yes.
And again, rocky waters with NATO, but Mark Rutte has signaled that he feels like things are okay. They're stabilizing, but at the same time,
we'll see.
It's going to be I would think a fine meeting, but with Donald Trump, he is going to shake the tree.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Well, we're going to talk to Jonathan Savage the next hour, and see what he thinks about that, because he's covering NATO.
Exactly. Meanwhile, we'll get you caught up on the headlines coming up on the other side. U.S. out of the World Cup in rough fashion. We'll talk about that as well. Coming up, it's JR Morning. 7:05 here on Tuesday. It's good to have you here on JR Morning. USA Soccer had a heck of a run. Getting out of the group stage, the round of 32, get to the round of 16, and that was about it. They couldn't muster up much of anything last night.
Would you have been surprised if they had made it through this round?
No. No, I thought they were going to beat Belgium.
Okay. So you wouldn't have been surprised?
No.
Okay.
No, no. In fact, I thought even without Flo Balogun, they were going to win that game.
Okay, okay.
But, boy, that's on me. My bad. If I contributed to you getting your hopes up, you can blame me.
Well, listen, it was just been big, man, here. I mean, and just seeing, but as you talked about, you know, before, besides the games itself, the people who have come here, who have experienced America and who have experienced the food and the people, to me, that is just as exciting as the games, to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was reading a story about this German guy who came to the United States. He was going to Boston, and he was like, I was nervous to come here. Like, I hear it's just guns and shooting and just madness here.
Uh-huh.
And he ended up going to the game in Boston, wasn't able to get a ride back to his hotel.
Okay.
So just some guy, some Boston resident, and his family were driving. They saw him. They're like, what are you doing? He's like, I can't get back to my hotel. They're like, well, get in. We'll take you. So they take him to his hotel, made this friend. He's like, he started crying. He's like,
wow,
I love it here. He goes, this is not at all what I thought this was.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, people here are so kind. The food is off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is great. This has been, he extended his trip because he was like, I have fallen in love with America now. I had no idea it was like this. And that's where I think, you know, it's been about the perception of what America is. And
Absolutely.
Yes, we can have our political squabbles. Ask the British about that.
Sure.
We can have our disagreements amongst our population. That's our thing.
Yeah.
But this is a wonderful place. And I think people have been, some people at least, have been blinded by the fact that, you know, we get terrible news coverage.
Oh, we do.
And so you just think one way, and then you come here, you're like, wait, this is not at all what I expected.
Well, it's the same thing with the city. I mean, and, you know, we have our issues here in the city, but for the most part, you know, people come here and enjoy themselves. I had relatives who came over the holiday weekend who haven't been here in years. And they go downtown and they say,
where are we?
Is this?
Yeah.
This is not the Detroit I remember.
Right.
I mean, you got areas downtown that were alleys. They're now all decorated with restaurants on either side.
Oh, restaurants. There's lights stringing between
yes,
the buildings.
Exactly. Exactly. The people movers moving. The voice on it sounds great. They're like, who is that voice on the people mover? I was like, hey, I don't know. Who the guy sounds good, though. Who is it?
But, yeah.
No.
So I think that all of these things play into – you know, the experience and part of what the World Cup has been outside of just the soccer field.
It does. It does. And so it's good.
It stinks that the U.S. came out flat, that they didn't come out ready. They didn't look like they were prepared at all for that match.
So really wasn't prepared to play the whole game, maybe part of the game.
It didn't look like they were prepared at all.
Oh, okay. All right. Michigan health officials are warning residents as a cyclosporiasis outbreak continues to grow across the state. Reported cases have jumped from 170 to 572 in just a few days, with the highest numbers in Monroe, Lenawee, Washtenaw, Wayne, Shiawassee, Jackson, Oakland, and Livingston counties. While investigators have not identified a specific grower or produce source, past outbreaks have been linked to bagged salad mixes, fresh cilantro, basil, raspberries, snow peas, and green onions. Health officials recommend thoroughly washing fresh produce or cooking it when possible to reduce the risk of infection. Symptoms include severe watery diarrhea, stomach cramps, nausea, low-grade fever, and can appear up to 2 weeks after you get exposed. Now, anyone experiencing persistent symptoms should contact a healthcare provider, as the illness can be treated with antibiotics. I had a niece who thought she thinks that she had it. She just got woke up one morning and she was all messed up, man. You know, now she's normal now. And I don't think she went to the doctor and got any antibiotics, but she it just kind of went away on its own. But it was pretty bad for her for at least a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, great news for Michigan State University. President Kevin Guskowitz is staying. He's deciding against going to Clemson. University officials announced that even after he was this candidate for Clemson's open position, he's decided to stay. It provides a tremendous amount of stability, welcome stability in East Lansing for Kevin Guskowitz and quite frankly, all the living alumni, all the students there. And he will continue to serve as Michigan State's president. It's great, great news.
What happens to Jay Batts, though?
Well, Jay Batts, according to the Kentucky president, is still going to Kentucky.
Okay.
Now, the buyout is different because they were tied together. So if Guskowitz goes, then Jay Batts' buyout
is less.
Cuts by 50%.
Okay.
So it's much more palatable for another school to pay that off.
Sure.
Well, now that Kevin Guskowitz is staying, Jay Batts is, according to these reports, still leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So that buyout now jumps. I think it's $5 million. So Michigan State will be getting another $2.5 million if indeed Jay Batts does leave, which according to these reports, he is going to go.
And a war of words was growing over who paid for the Gordie Howe International Bridge, with U.S. Ambassador to Canada Pete Hoekstra sparking criticism after calling Canada's role a big myth. During a recent podcast interview, Hoekstra and Canada said Canada provided the upfront financing for the nearly $4.7 billion bridge project, but agreed the cost will ultimately be covered through tolls paid by drivers who use the crossing. Former Canadian officials pushed back, saying Canada funded the project and assumed the financial risk. They point to the 2012 agreement between Canada and Michigan, in which Canada agreed to finance construction while recovering costs through toll revenue. The long-awaited Detroit-Windsor Bridge is complete, but its opening has been delayed as U.S. and Canadian officials work through some unresolved issues. Hoekstra says the bridge is expected to open, but a timeline remains uncertain.
Well, but the Ambassador Bridge also has tolls.
Yeah.
So you're also basically taking money from people from the United States going to Canada.
Mm-hmm. So, it's more to it.
Okay.
Man, you know.
I'm not sure I follow that logic.
And I'm not sure either. And my whole thing is, too, is the bridge is done.
Yeah,
and you're just keeping, I mean, it's one thing if, you know, the bridge hadn't started or was half done or, you know, it hadn't been connected. It's done. It's ready to go.
Ready to rock. Donald Trump in Turkey for the NATO summit. We'll talk to Jonathan Savage on the other side. But first, at 7:13, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rock your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial, tech, and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. According to a new study from media agency Carrot, audio has evolved into a cultural force that shapes identity, builds community, and influences how consumers connect with the world around them. The report, The Power of Sound 2026, was produced in partnership with SiriusXM Media and Creative Company. Drawing on listener data, cultural analysis, and social listening, this study makes clear that audio, in particular in the form of music, podcasts, and live experiences, have transformed audio from a background medium into what it calls a cultural powerhouse that plays an increasingly important role in daily life. Audio no longer lives in the background, the report says. What once functioned primarily as a reach channel has evolved into one of the most culturally resonant spaces where identity is expressed, values are reinforced, and belonging is built. Researchers contend that audio strength lies in its ability to accompany consumers throughout the day, whether they're commuting, exercising, working, or relaxing. Unlike media tied to screens, audio moves seamlessly through the daily routines, creating what the report describes as intimate environments where listeners develop deeper emotional connections with content, personalities, and experiences. And the power of audio represents an opportunity for brands. Brands unlock meaningful growth when they become part of culture. And audio, an increasingly dynamic channel offering scale, intimacy, and efficient reach, provides a powerful path forward, the report says. It argues that in an increasingly fragmented media environment, marketers should view audio not simply as a reach vehicle, but as a place where culture is actively formed, not fleetingly captured. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Well, Donald Trump has deboarded Air Force One. He is in Turkey for the NATO summit. And there are some new, fresh frustrations from European allies, particularly on these U.S.-led operations in Iran. That continues to be a sticking point. Also, the long-term strategy on Ukraine. It's reported that Donald Trump is going to meet with Volodymyr Zelensky on this trip as well. And those attacks by Russia has intensified on Kyiv and Ukraine as well. Let's talk about it. Jonathan Savage, our Fox News reporter and WJR contributor in Turkey covering this NATO summit. Jonathan, it's good to have you there. What's on tap for the president this afternoon?
Yeah, President Trump will be meeting his host this afternoon, President Erdogan of Turkey. President Trump said that he probably wouldn't have come to this summit were it not for the fact that, his friend, a man he admires in Recep Tayyip Erdogan, was hosting the event. But he is here. I'm just looking at a picture of Air Force One on the tarmac at an Air Force base that has been upgraded and essentially created in order to host the planes of the world leaders who have landed here and are landing here over the course of the day. You mentioned Volodymyr Zelensky. On another of my monitors, I see Volodymyr Zelensky speaking right now. He is here to ask for more help defending his country from Russia. Russia, over the last week, has been bombarding Ukraine with a brand new intensity. Hundreds of drones and missiles raining down on cities, including the capital, Kyiv, crashing into apartment blocks, killing more than 50 civilians. President Trump wants a peace deal in Ukraine. Vladimir Zelensky will tell President Trump that what Russia is doing is a show of weakness, not strength, and that Vladimir Putin should be pressured into talks towards a dignified peace.
Jonathan, President Trump has repeatedly questioned whether NATO allies are paying their fair share. Is he entering this summit with more leverage than in previous years?
Well, last year at the NATO summit in The Hague, that was the summit where most allies agreed to spend 5% of their wealth on defense. And this is the summit where they are going to be held to that promise. The question is, how do they achieve that? Secretary General Mark Rutte says that he wants clear and concrete plans from NATO members about how they're going to prevent gaps in their defense as some American assets withdraw from Europe, as is likely to happen. So that's one of the key questions today and tomorrow for NATO leaders. NATO 3.0 is the buzz phrase because things are changing. The alliance is evolving and Europe is adjusting to receiving less American support.
I'm sorry. Is there still serious discussion about Ukraine eventually joining NATO, or has that become much more of a distant goal?
In order for a country to join NATO, it needs unanimity from all the current members. We saw that when Sweden and Finland applied to join NATO, and Turkey held up their application for some time, eventually allowing them to enter. The United States has made it clear, the U.S. government made it clear that they don't believe that Ukraine should join NATO. Now, we heard time and time again before President Trump came back to power that Ukraine's place is in NATO. That's what leaders told us multiple times. But that's not being talked about anymore because they know that that idea doesn't have American support.
So you talk about NATO 3.0, something that the administration has been focused on. Matthew Whitaker, the ambassador to the UN, has talked about the president's disappointment in some of the allies and allowing us to use our bases in those countries as launching off points in Iran, particularly Spain. How does that become a flashpoint here?
Yeah, Iran's absolutely part of it. President Trump, we know he speaks his mind publicly and in private. And I think that when he holds meetings with NATO leaders, he will bring up the fact that he felt that they were disloyal by not allowing the full and unfettered use of all their military assets for launching attacks in Iran and for overflight as well. Now, the Secretary General of NATO, Mark Rutte, says that 4,000 or 5,000 U.S. flights did leave or arrive from European bases. And the vast majority of European countries in NATO were helpful. But that's not enough for President Trump. And he will continue to put the squeeze, I think, on countries that he sees are not pulling their weight.
Is this summit really testing whether NATO can stay united despite these political differences among its members?
Well, you can be sure that Russia is watching, Vladimir Putin is watching, and it's a test and a challenge for NATO to make sure that Russia doesn't see all this as an alliance that is weak and is divided. So it does pose a threat to the alliance when there's such a public disagreement, when you have, as President Trump said in the past, he said that perhaps the US wouldn't stand behind NATO members, come to the aid of NATO members who hadn't been paying enough towards their defense. Others in NATO were pretty horrified by that, saying that, well, look, that brings to question the whole point of the alliance. So it all depends, of course, on what President Trump says, because other times he said that he does fully stand behind the Article 5 guarantee. Mm-hmm. So everyone is just watching and waiting to see what his comments are.
Certainly the idea of the United States not being a part of NATO, but Donald Trump pushing for more defense spending from these countries certainly is on the underlying here. What is Mark Rutte's position on this? He has been, he seems like he's trying to play both sides here for the European countries and then the United States as almost an intermediary. What's his role really here in this meeting?
He has been holding the alliance together, some would say. He has been working incessantly, it would appear, to keep President Trump on side in the alliance, to make sure that he knows what European countries are doing. He's been trying to convince President Trump that European leaders are stepping up. And President Trump wants to see that. He wants to see allies sharing more of the burden. So for Mark Rutte, he is someone who has heard time and again that European countries aren't paying off. Because President Trump wasn't the first U.S. president to say this, but Mark Rutte says that only President Trump could have got the European countries to make these commitments.
Jonathan Savage, great insight. Thank you for your time as always. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Take care.
You got it.
Rutte has earned his nickname of the Trump Whisperer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, he's got a tough job.
He does. He certainly does.
And the idea of Ukraine joining NATO at this point, I mean, you go back to the 90s, there was reunification talks with Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, there was talk, and Russia claims that it was a promise. The United States never made, or NATO, I should say, never indicated that there was a promise there, but they were talking about not going eastward, that those countries bordering Russia would not be a part of this.
Right.
Ukraine falls in that, mm-hmm. which I think is where the hesitation is.
Yeah,
is Russia doesn't want those NATO countries bordering theirs.
Yes.
And that has become a major sticking point. Then there's the 97 Act that was signed. All those things play into whether or not Ukraine would be involved, but it doesn't sound like there's that really has died off, more of a supportive role by NATO for Ukraine at this point. We'll take a break, get you caught up on the headlines. More coming up next here on JR Morning. All right, so I think I've talked about this a couple of times. We're moving, yeah. Right?
Yes.
And we cleared everything out of our house this weekend. We got everything out.
Okay.
We had movers come and a couple, odds and ends and different stuff and whatever.
Okay.
Here's one thing that I didn't expect. Because, the kids now are older. And this was our first house, so it was smaller.
Sure.
And we needed to get something a little more room.
Got it.
Because their demands are different. Before, when they're a baby, it doesn't matter. They can be in the little rocker, and it takes up no space.
That's cool.
Now they have friends, and we want to host holidays and things like that. We couldn't do that in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting a slightly larger house, and And here's what I didn't expect. I didn't expect the emotions that come along with it.
Yeah, man.
Now, I can tell you, I didn't expect the emotions of being thrilled to throw most of my things away.
Because that's how we do it, man.
It is incredibly freeing.
Yeah, that's how we do it now.
Now, I'll tell you, I got yelled at a couple of times.
Of course. You're going to do that. You're going to get
because
that.
Because I was being a little too liberal in what I was getting rid of.
No.
And my wife's like, what are you? That's like an unopened toy. And I'm like, I don't know. Get rid of it. I don't want to see it anymore. They're not playing with it. What do they need it for?
They went all this time without even dealing
with
it.
We'll donate it. We'll get rid of it. I don't care.
That's how I am.
And then you're like, whew, this feels nice.
Yes.
There's less stuff.
Oh, man.
Now, somehow we still have a lot of stuff.
Because it's amazing how much you accumulate over time.
You accumulate a lot. But once we got everything out on Sunday, we told the kids, we're like, all right, this is it. Last time you're here. Do a walkthrough. Go to your rooms one more time.
Yeah.
And it was emotional.
Sure. Sure. I get that.
And then you start replaying. And then the kids went to my parents' house, and then we came back, picked a couple things up, vacuumed, whatever.
Yeah.
A couple odds and ends. And then it's just my wife and I standing there. And then the waterworks.
Oh, yeah, man.
No, then it's we're a blubbering mess standing at the island in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, all the memories come back. Mm-hmm. The first steps mm-hmm. and the birthdays mm-hmm. and the Christmases and the Easter and whatever, all this stuff. It all starts flowing back.
It was like that with my brothers and sisters when my mom sold our house that we grew up in.
Yeah.
It was like that. When it was empty, everything was going out. We're all in the house, the brothers and the sisters.
Yeah.
Man, and we're just all there, man. And we're just...
It's a mess.
It's hard, bro. It's hard.
I didn't expect it. Now, I'm sure you've moved before. I would love mm-hmm. to hear from you. Did you find this to be the case? 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. I didn't expect it. I didn't expect it because, you know me, I think a little differently.
Sure.
I'm a little off kilter.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no.
With some of my takes.
Uh-huh. That's why I was happy to come back.
Some of this stuff isn't for air purposes.
Because some things haven't changed. just so you guys know.
But I'm like, this is a building. It's a structure.
Yeah.
There's no life in it.
No.
It's wood but and siding and concrete and drywall.
But it's memories, though.
But it is. I didn't expect it.
It is.
It caught me completely off guard.
It's like a person. And when a person passes away, they're gone. They're not there here with you physically. But it's those memories that you still have.
Yeah, I had no idea that was going to happen. And finally, my wife, I mean, honestly, it was a blubbering mess. And I go, we need to leave. Because we're just going to stand here and just, talk. And remember when the, right, remember yeah, when the
exactly.
kids came to I'm like,
no, but
oh, my God. I had no idea. I was yeah. caught off guard. It caught me by surprise. And even now, I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm like, hold it together.
But no. But plus you guys have been busy. Getting the house in order,
yeah.
moving things,
yeah,
all
yeah.
that. So you just, it's no, just it, not thinking
no,
about
that's
that.
That's a great point because you don't even think about
you
it.
You don't think about that part.
It's just, we got to get this bin out of that room.
Yeah,
we got to
there you go.
Take
yeah.
the TV off that wall.
Uh-huh.
I,
yeah.
bring it. I just didn't know. And it again, I'm happy to be moving past this and into a new place.
Sure.
But it's like, gonna miss it a little bit.
No. Yeah, absolutely you will. I mean, that's just normal.
Shelly's in St. Clair Shore. Shelly, good morning.
When we closed out my mom's house, it was horrible. There were four of us siblings. Two were military related, so they had multiple houses, and they left early. I was the one who was there, like, the longest,
mm-hmm.
and it was horrible.
Shelly, I feel you. It was the same way. It was the same way with my parents. Yeah.
And I will say, if anybody buys my mother's house and does any reconstruction, they will find two pictures. There was a family picture nobody wanted, so we kind of hid it someplace. And there was another picture of my parents, and on the back we wrote a little something about the family that lived here and this and that and the history of the house.
Wow,
that's very cool. Now, did you expect that reaction? Did you expect that emotion to come out or no?
I knew it was going to happen. And my sisters were like, we've moved so many times. This is just another place. And I'm like, no, this is like, and then my sister got pissed at me because I would keep going by the house and telling her what they were doing. And she's like,
yep. We did the same thing. Did it too.
The lilac bush got pulled, the fence got put up, the tree. I'm like, no, they can't do that.
Uh-huh. All of a sudden, it's not the same place anymore,
yeah.
huh?
Yes.
Well,
have a good day.
Thank you, Shelly. You too. We appreciate
no,
you.
No, I get it. We did the same thing. We would report to my mom and stuff. Hey, mom, they're doing this. What are they doing? But one good thing about our old family house, I was able to go in it once they finished everything. And they let me take pictures of the house, of all the changes that they made inside of the house and everything. And so, you know, it was kind of cool. And I was able to show it to my mom. And my mom, you know, before she passed, she said, okay, I feel better about the house. They did a good job.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
With the house.
Sure.
You know? But, I mean, my son right now, my oldest son, he's 30. He'll be 38 end of the month. And he told me, he said, Dad, I'm sorry. He says, you know, when I'm ready to get my own home,
sure.
I'm going to see if they want to sell it because I want Nana's house.
Oh, really?
I said, really? He was like,
that's cool.
He's a dad. The memories there.
Memories.
I just, yeah. You know, I would love to have Nana's house.
We got a text. Did you throw the things away or did your wife? When you unpack, you will realize that your wife threw out things that you thought you took and tried to keep. I'll tell you, if it was up to me, I would have thrown everything I own away.
Oh, God.
I would have rented
it. That's how we do, man. I mean, we just.
I would have rented a dumpster and I would have said, starting over. Just start from scratch.
Because I've done it. I've thrown things away, man. Like, okay, just get rid of it. Just get rid of it. And then later on down the line, I'm like, hey, did you see what? You know, you threw that away when we.
Did I?
Oh, okay.
We have been married for 10 years.
Uh huh.
We have stuff still in boxes from our wedding that we've never opened.
Oh, yeah. So do we.
And I'm like, then what is the purpose of this item?
We lived all the time.
We obviously don't use this roasting pan.
That's right. Without the roasting pan, we haven't used
it. We've been getting along just fine.
Get along great.
See, Chris, what about a garage sale?
Okay. Here's my thing about a garage sale.
Okay.
I don't have the patience.
I get that. But, you know, I mean, you were talking earlier about like an unopened toy. I mean, you could always donate you can do a garage sale.
We donate.
Donate, write it off, man.
But yeah, have a garage sale.
The write it off. I mean, yes.
I'll come over and keep you company. We'll watch soccer.
Well,
here's
my other thing. When I was a kid, I had a garage sale.
Okay.
It was basically my stuff.
Okay.
And again, talk about like memories or things. I have a lot of like sports memorabilia.
Uh huh.
Some odds and like I have some like a Pat LaFontaine signed hockey puck.
Okay.
Right? It's value there, not really. But I was like, this is a $50 hockey puck.
Oh, you
have? I am not going off of any factual information. I was like 12.
Going by what you thought it should be.
And I'm like, you know what else I had? I had this, it's a wooden baseball glove, and it's got a place to hang a bat and a ball, and a little hook for your glove.
Okay.
And you'd hang it on your wall.
Yeah.
Right? I had that when I was a kid.
Nice.
It was sentimental to me. It's a piece of wood that looks like a baseball glove.
Okay.
There's no value there. I'm like, this is $15 and somebody will pay $15 for it. Of course, nobody bought any of my stuff. So I'm sitting here with all my stuff. Nobody has come and bought anything.
That's why you don't have the patience.
I'm jaded. Because nobody wants my crap. at a marked up price at a garage sale. I told my mom, I'm like, I'm going to have a garage sale. I'm going to sell this stuff. I'm going to save my money and buy whatever. And she's like, okay. And she's like, how much are you going to sell it for?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, $30.
It messed you up, man.
She's like,
you're scarred.
No.
You're scarred.
No.
Yeah, I don't think you can have a garage sale.
No, I'm not.
Unless you're not a part of it. Just let the wife do it.
I'm not equipped. Meanwhile, the most influential figure in Democratic politics is Barack Obama. How influential will he be in these midterms? Talk about it next. It's JR Morning. See, traditionally, the outgoing president of a party kind of is the figurehead.
Sure.
You know, and in the Democrats' case, that would be Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like that. It doesn't seem like that's working for Democrats right now.
No.
Well, then who is that figure? It's Barack Obama.
The last Democrat.
Yeah, Barack Obama is still the most consequential Democrat left in the party.
Mm-hmm.
And he left office in 2016.
Right.
So what role does he have going forward, especially with a party now that's dealing with a completely different faction in places?
Yes.
Where you're getting a much more socialist push. You're pushing aside the incumbents, you're pushing aside some of the more moderates or even liberal Democrats that are sympathetic to some of the progressive causes, but are more on the side of the Chuck Schumers and things like that. There is a distancing happening there. And we've seen that in places like Colorado, in Maine, in New York.
In New York, yeah.
So what role does Barack Obama play here? Mike Radke is a longtime Democratic strategist and joins us this morning to talk about it. Mike, good morning. It's good to have you.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me on.
How does the party at this point use Barack Obama? Because again, I don't think Joe Biden's available. So how does he get involved in trying to sway Democrats into a certain election and then once we get into head-to-head matchups?
Well, I wanted to just step back and recharacterize kind of what you said to start the segment. I don't think it's so much a socialist versus other push. I think it's a push against the gerontocracy that currently runs the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. For a lot of, especially youthful Democrats, they're most concerned with people like, on the other side, Mitch McConnell or Chuck Schumer, who are in their 80s and 70s, who have been in the party for a long time, who have held power for 20, 30 years. A lot of what you're seeing now, in my opinion, is young people rising up and saying, we want our say. Mm.
Also, you know, is it healthy for a political party to continue looking for a former president for direction, or does there come a point in time where new leadership just has to emerge?
I think it's a combination of the two. I mean, President Obama is well-loved by everyone, not just Democrats in this country. And I think that he knows that he has a role to play, but it's more of a behind-the-scenes role. He feels that he needs to kind of inspire the next generation, give tips, tricks, try to explain how to get elected. But he's also not leading the charge into the next generation, as we all can agree.
Yeah, I think that's actually my take on it as well. I actually don't think he should be front